Welcome to the Hoopsite Podcast. My name is Alex Kennedy. Joining me today is a friend of the show. He's one of the top skill coaches in the world. And as the CEO of Pure Sweat, he's worked with players such as Joel Embiid, Bradley Beal, Jason Tatum, RJ Barrett, Zach LaVine, and many others. My guest is Drew Hanlon. Drew, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you. It's always fun to pick your brain. You work with these guys all summer long. And last year, we actually did an episode where you came on and talked about the work you do with each of your players and the goals that you set for the season. And our listeners loved it. They loved the behind the scenes information that you provided. You know, they obviously don't get a chance to be in that gym and see the work these guys put in. So I wanted to kind of do something similar this year and get a similar breakdown and go through your roster of players. So let's start with Joel Embiid. Obviously, he's an MVP candidate, a guy that is getting better every single season. What did you kind of work on with Embiid this past summer, and what kind of goals did you guys set for this season?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Joel had a great season last year. He did something that in the modern day NBA had only been done by Shaquille O'Neal during Shaq's only MVP season, which was, 27 points, 13 rebounds, and, three assists or something like that. He had a monster, statistical season last year. But our big thing was just ways to impact the game, especially in the playoffs. The number one thing was just making sure that, he was healthy so that he could, play a full season and be at his best when he needs to be at his best in the playoffs. So, he rehabbed hard with his rehab team. And then basketball wise, we just worked on, attacking double teams. We know that no one can guard him in an isolation situation. So now it's just about reading defenses, being able to play at different paces, being able to protect the ball to limit turnovers. He did a good job cracking down on his turnovers last year, but still had too many for our liking. So just that. And then also just improving his shooting. We made a couple little tweaks to his shot. It was the first year that we actually worked on his shot. A lot of people don't realize that. We've had kind of a long-term plan for him, and this is the first year that we kind of worked on his shot. So I think his shooting numbers will increase this year as well.
Yeah, right now he's, making a career high 3-pointers per game. How much can that unlock the other aspects of his game too? I feel like, he's been a decent shooter. Even last year, he shot, I think, 35% from three, around there, 36%. He's been a decent shooter, but do you think getting better from there, getting more efficient and taking more shots from three will make him even tougher to guard?
Well, I mean, I think that number one is always being a bully. Owning the paint is going to be always his kind of bread and butter.
Sure.
Forcing teams to throw different, defensive schemes and adjustments at him. But we did want to expand his game so that when teams were doubling him, he could still be able to get buckets for his team. They lost, a shot creator in Jimmy Butler. They lost a shooter in J.J. Redick. And so we knew that, especially kind of in crunch time, he needed to be a better creator. So being able to make the three and then also being able to, attack off the dribble from the perimeter were two big things that we added to his game just so that, he was more versatile. You see him posting up a lot more from the nail this year, basically at the free throw line, the middle of the free throw line, which you used to see, Dirk Nowitzki used to do that a lot. And you've seen Kevin Durant do that a lot just because for spacing purposes, it's harder to double from that position. So, we knew that if he improved his shot, he improved reading double teams and he improved his handles, that he'd just be a more versatile threat that, was harder to, adjust to for defensive coverages.
For sure. You've also worked with Jason Tatum since he was, 13 years old. I think we talked about this last year about how you've tried so many different things with Jason and, you tweak his game a lot and he's kind of learned, you guys both learn a lot from each other. You've always talked about that. When you talk about Tatum's summer, what did he kind of focus on? And last year, I think some people were kind of disappointed. They thought he'd have more of a breakout season. What did you kind of tweak after last year to make sure he gets back on, that all-star trajectory?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think a lot of people saw what he was able to do in the playoffs his rookie season and, take LeBron to game seven and carry the Celtics as far as he did. But, as a lot of casual fans are starting to understand, a lot of the NBA is about opportunity. And so I think that as you've already seen in this early season, now that he's, getting put in different situations and he has a more more opportunity to kind of take advantage of different situations, you're seeing the kind of playoff Tatum that you saw his rookie season. I think the couple things that we wanted to do was we wanted to really help him become, more of a 3-point shooter. The first two seasons he shot 40%. which is really unheard of. I know a lot of people kind of, kind of under the breath gave him trouble for having a down shooting year, but he still shot 37% from three last year. They were just expecting the 43% that he had shot his rookie season. And right. So he's off to a really hot start right now. But we're trying to get a lot more threes up. The other thing is driving to the basket. And, he has been driving to the basket a lot more, early on. He hasn't been finishing as many as we'd like. So we're going to have to continue just getting him more and more comfortable doing that. And then also one of the things we've been doing a lot watching on film is just how to draw fouls, because he's not getting to the free throw line enough. So, he's doing a great job finding more threes, knocking them down. He's doing a lot better job of, creating for others. You see a lot more, team player out there this year. He's not hunting shots. He's kind of letting the game come to him, but he's still got to just continue to finish better around the rim and continue to get to the free throw line more, so that he can just, make it easier on himself. Right now he's, averaging 22, 23 points a game, but he's got to work really hard for that. And if you see the best players in the game, they get to the charity stripe, they get free throws, they get layups, they get dunks, and they get open threes. And, that's going to be the evolution for him to really take his game to the next level, is just letting the game continue to come to him, picking and choosing his spots to attack and take over, and then just being a really efficient and effective player. So, it's a growth process that a lot of young players have to go through. But in the analytical era that we live in, you got to make adjustments to kind of adapt to that game. And so I think you've already seen it from him this year. He's driving twice as much as he did last season. He's shooting more threes and making more threes. And I think that's why he's having a better start to the season.
There was an interesting article on, I think it was ESPN.com, Tim Bontemps wrote about his adjustment. And I know you were quoted in that story saying that you kind of put him on the same plan that Bradley Beal was on whenever he made that leap to become an all-star player. And you kind of detailed that, getting to the free throw line would be a huge thing for him to be able to, increase his points per game. And there were in the article too, they kind of talked about, you mentioned how, this is all, today's NBA is so driven by analytics and how the game has changed so much. They kind of talked about how he was taking some shots similar to, what Kobe Bryant used to take. And obviously it was well documented that he had worked with Kobe and yourself, briefly there, and how he was kind of forcing mid-range jumpers and sometimes contested jumpers. Do you think that's kind of a testament to how much the game has changed, that, he was taking shots that we always look at as Kobe shots, and Kobe obviously was amazing at doing that for a long time. But now it almost seems like you have to be able to get to the free throw line, like you mentioned, and then either shoot from the outside or at the rim. Do you think that kind of shows how different the NBA is today versus when Kobe played?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think there's been an adjustment. I put out a study on Twitter not too long ago that showed, how the finals MVP, where he got his shot attempts. And, I basically documented as far back as they did shooting chart back when Michael Jordan was playing, and showed that the finals MVP actually collectively had shot twice as many mid-range jump shots as they had three-pointers. Now, the trend was obviously towards more three pointers. But the truth is, the best players in playoffs, in the crunch time, they still have to be able to make shots all over the floor, whether that's mid range, three pointers, et cetera. But at the same time, you don't want to find yourself, shooting long twos when you could easily make that a three pointer and yield more points. You don't want to find yourself, shooting fadeaways or step backs that don't result in, you having the ability to draw fouls when you could take one more bounce, get to the rim and, convert a higher percentage or, pick up more fouls. So, I think that, Jason's always been a scorer. That's what he's been. He's worked his entire life to become a great scorer. He's so gifted. And so now it's just about, reading the game, making some adjustments on the angles that he's taken and pace and, putting that into action. But, I think people sometimes discredit how gifted he really is. And for him to be his age and be able to do the things he is, I mean, it's really special. And I've been able to work with some really high level players, and what he can do is really almost unmatched as far as the combination of mid post and mid range and to the basket and shooting threes and your handles, all that. He's just got all the tools to be a superstar. And so now it's just about strategically getting him in, to that place while still impacting winning, which is the number one skill that a player can have.
For sure, yeah. And I mean, whenever he was going through last season, I was thinking he's 20 years old. I mean, the kid is so young. And, you know, I had heard everything you have said over the years about, you know, his work ethic and how badly he wants to be great. And, you know, you've said a lot of interesting things about your work with him over the years. And I was just thinking this kid's going to be fine. And I think also because you guys have worked together since he was 13 years old, there's that trust. I think he knew that you would help him kind of tweak certain things. And this is an ongoing thing. I mean, I think people won't want to look at a player and think, okay, they made the jump and now they're going to be great and they don't have to keep working. But really, you know, guys can't get complacent. I think it's an ongoing thing where you have to keep working on his game and keep adding different things. Does that trust factor help the fact that you've been with him since he was 13 years old? And, you know, you guys trust each other to be able to get the best out of each other?
No question. We challenge each other all the time. I mean, it's a constant, you know, I can go at him, he can go at me, and we're totally fine. You know, he knows that I care about him. You know, I know he cares about me, and we're in this thing just to help him get better. I think that the thing that a lot of people don't realize these days because of the social media world we live in is that my job as a skills coach is to provide guidance for Jason, but it's ultimately Jason that's driving, you know, himself. And I think that a lot of people think that, you know, when these guys have massive leaps in their game, they credit the trainer, or if the guy's struggling, they blame the trainer, when the truth is, it's a player that's either going to get the results or not get the results. And so, you know, Jason trust me to, you know, break down the analytics, provide a game plan, break down the film, you know, provide side notes. And then, you know, from there, you know, it's just about making adjustments throughout the season so that he can have the best season possible.
Another guy that you've worked with since they were really young is RJ Barrett. You know, we talked about him last year and you were kind of predicting that he would be great in the NBA. You were talking about how, you know, you've seen him play up against NBA guys since he was 14, 15 years old. And he's been, you know, able to hold his own since then. So you've obviously been seeing this coming for a while now, but how impressed have you been with his start to his rookie season? And what were your focuses with him this summer?
Well, you know, with RJ, obviously a lot of people doubted that he was going to be able to make shots. You know, it was very actually similar to Jason. You know, Jason shot 34% at Duke from three, and we had to make adjustments during the pre-draft process. And, you know, I was bragging about Jason as a shooter during the pre-draft process, and a lot of people thought I was just, you know, hyping him up. But, you know, he's obviously proven that he made adjustments and they've been getting results. And, you know, RJ is off to a great start from the three-point line. You know, he's shooting 36% from three, which a lot of people didn't think he would shoot. And, you know, for me, he's struggling at the free throw line still, which, you know, I don't know what's going on there, but his shot is looking a lot more confident and comfortable out there. You know, he's averaging 18, 6, and 4 almost. I just think that he plays with such a fearless, you know, competitiveness that he's always going to figure out how to have an impact when he's out there on the court. You know, I think that there's a ton of areas of his game that he can still grow and develop, but he loves the game. He works his butt off. You know, he's a guy that loves watching film and breaking down film. And those are the guys that I always bet on and believe in, just because, you know, while there's room for improvement, you know that they're going to fill those kind of improvement gaps over time, just because they're going to put in the work and they're craving the results that come from the work.
So last time we talked, we were talking about RJ just as a hypothetical NBA player. Now that we know his situation, we know he's going to be a New York Knick for many years. How good can he be? What is his ceiling now that we kind of have more context for his NBA career?
I mean, again, I know that people are going to say, oh, you're his trainer. Obviously, you have to say this. But, you know, I think the sky's the limit for RJ. I mean, you see what he's doing early on. You know, I know a lot of people are worried about the kind of, you know, minutes per game that he's playing, but that's how you improve as a basketball player. Just go out there, play the game of basketball, make mistakes, learn from them, you know, get it, go out there and you're making different reads and adjustments. And you see that Fizz is putting him in different situations so he can learn and grow from different spots on the floor. They're really trying to kind of test out different things to see where he can be successful. But I think the Knicks organization and the coaching staff there are really allowing him to, you know, grow at his pace, and they're not putting too much pressure on him. They're just kind of letting him be and letting him do what he's capable of doing. So I think he's going to have a really, really good NBA career. I think you'll see, you know, him in the All-Star game in the future. And, you know, I think that he's got a couple other steps. You know, you've seen that his shot has improved a ton over the last 2 years. And you'll see that to continue to get better. And as he continues to, you know, rely rely more and more on three-pointers, then his drives, which he's already so good at driving through contact, will open up even more. You see his ability to create for others. You know, a lot of people looked at him as kind of a selfish basketball player after the Gonzaga game at Duke, where he, you know, missed a couple field goal attempts at the end of the game. But, you know, you saw him throughout the season as Duke grow into a, you know, a great passer and a great distributor, where he almost ran the show at point guard for Duke down the stretch. And you've seen some of that trickle over. But, you know, I think that as he continues to improve his handles and adds a little more wiggle where he can get by guys and create more for himself and others, as he continues to kind of, you know, just tighten up his shot, where he feels comfortable making side steps and step backs and fadeaways that make those kind of great wing players really special. And as he kind of, you know, develops into a guy that can take mismatches, guys that aren't strong enough to guard him in the low post down there and attack from the low and mid post, I think you're just going to see a guy that adds elements to his game each and every year until he becomes an all-star and really becomes one of the better players in the league.
He's playing 37.1 minutes per game. It's the fourth most minutes in the NBA right now. On one hand, I know he's 19 years old and they want to get him as many minutes as possible and develop him. On the other hand, there's been some Knicks analysts, Knicks fans that have been critical of that and saying that, you know, he shouldn't be playing, especially late in games if it's a blowout. Where do you kind of stand on the argument about his minutes per game?
I totally understand that you want to be protective of you know, young assets, which is what he is. But, you know, early on in his NBA career, he just needs to play. He needs to be able to, you know, come off ball screens and get blitzed and get the ball stolen from him and say, you know what, I got to improve my angle. I got to, you know, do a better job of losing my primary defender, so next time I have more space to split. He's got to be able to come off pin downs and be able to say, okay, you know, here's how I swipe guys. And if they're being aggressive, okay, if they top lock, here's how I'm going to go back door, post up, et cetera. He's got to be able to say, okay, hey, listen, I've got a smaller guy under me that can really get under me, and I might not feel as comfortable handling the ball, so I need to take him down to the mid post or low post and be able to operate from down there. If a double comes, I've got to be able to pass out of the double or shoot over it with a fadeaway. Those things happen from just playing. And so while, you know, you would love to be able to watch film and just make adjustments or, you know, be kind of a workout warrior, you know, and even though that's what I do, you know, sometimes you just got to go out there and hoop and learn from kind of your mistakes and develop a feel from the game from just playing. So I see both sides of it. Obviously, you know, I don't think that him playing 82 games at 37 minutes a game is ideal for kind of long-term wear and tear, but I also love the aspect that he gets out there to try stuff and grow so that he can make adjustments throughout the year so that he can be a better player at the end of this season than he was at the start of this season, which is really the goal for him for this year.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Knicks fans are worried because they love his game and they're excited about his future. So they're thinking, we can't mess this up. We need to be really careful and put him in bubble wrap. But I understand both sides of that argument. I was just kind of curious where you fall. I want to talk about Bradley Beal. He's kind of the pure sweat OG. He's someone that you've worked with for many, many years. He's having a great year. I mean, he's putting up career highs so far in points, assists, three-pointers per game. What was your work with Bradley like this offseason? What kind of goals did you set for the season?
Yeah, no, Brad, I mean, Brad is definitely the pure sweat OG. He's the reason that I really am in this training game. You know, Brad and I started working together when he was 13. I was 17, and as his career took off, mine took off alongside it. But, you know, Brad being an all-star the last 2 years, you know, and really should have been an all-star the previous year, you know, and he's just been playing high-level basketball. I feel sorry for him that Jay Wall's out and that they're, you know, kind of, you know, roster isn't as helpful as it probably could have been, you know, if everything was in place. But for him to be putting up, you know, 27 points a game, I think he's averaging over 6 assists, maybe like 5 rebounds a game.
Yeah.
It just shows how kind of versatile he is. You know, and one of the big emphasis for him this year was try to shoot more threes. And you know, he's up from, I think, 7 attempts to 9 attempts a game or something like that. So he's, you know, shooting 2 more threes a game, which will help him out. And, you know, also, you know, again, like we talked about with Jason, one of Brad's big goals was to get to the free throw line more. You know, our kind of thing was, can you get 8 threes up a game and can you get 8 free throws up a game? And I think he's at 9 threes and just under 8 free throws a game. But when you look at the top players in the league, that's what they're doing. You know, a lot of people look at James Harden scoring and, you know, James Harden has so much in his bag. He's such a gifted offensive player. But the thing that really, really stands out to me is he's averaging, you know, James Harden, 16 free throw attempts a game.
Yeah.
And so while he is averaging, you know, 36 points a game or whatever, I mean, 15 of those points are coming from the line. Again, he's making it easier on himself. And so, you know, that was one of the big things that Brad wanted to do was get to the line more. And he's doing that, shoot more threes, which he's doing that. And then also, this is a year for him to really, you know, try to carry a team more, you know what I mean? And I think that the last two seasons, he's had the chance to, you know, he's played 82 games back-to-back years. And he's really had great statistical years and been able to really lead. But this is a year where for him, he's going to try to see how much he can get out of his teammates, out of himself, and really kind of push that, you know, status of him being one of the best players in the NBA, not from just a, okay, he's an all-star, he's really good, but like, all right, Brad is one of those the best players. He just happens to, you know, not be on a contender that might not get as much love as, you know, he would if he was on a different team, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely a realistic goal for him. I think you kind of saw that before he signed the extension with Washington. There were a lot of fan bases that wanted their team to acquire Brad. I know he has a lot of fans around the NBA as well. I want to ask you, though, about you were 17 years old, starting out training him. He was 13. You mentioned that. What was that like for you? What did you realize, okay, this could actually be something that changes my life? Because, I mean, at 17 and Brad being 13, obviously you guys probably dream of where you're at right now. You probably dreamed of, you know, him making the NBA, you becoming a top trainer, top coach. At what point did you realize this could actually be a path for you? And when did your life start to kind of change?
You know, really, it's funny, but I think in order to be successful in anything in life, you have to really believe that, you know, whatever you want to happen is possible. And so, you know, when I started training players around the St. Louis area, I never kind of had any aspirations to do what I'm doing now. I just really wanted to help out every player that was in the gym with me. And so by kind of, you know, pouring my heart and soul into the local kids around St. Louis, you know, I really fell in love with helping people and helping players. And that's what basketball training is. It's, you know, helping people become the best version of people and players as you can. And so, you know, I fell in love with it, started to study the game more so that I could help them more, you know, really built good relationships with each and every guy that I worked with so that I knew exactly what was going on in their life and in their game so that I could help them make adjustments to improve both. And, you know, Brad just happened to be the guy that really took off that, helped me get a little bit more notoriety. But, you know, the truth is, you know, Brad would have been an NBA player with or without me. These guys are, you know, always they get to the NBA or they stay in the NBA because, you know, they put in the work. They have, you know, that mentality, they have the skills, et cetera. You know, I just happened to be able to really help Brad kind of lock in on a plan, teach him a lot of skills at an early age that helped him develop, you know, shooting and helped him develop, you know, footwork and fundamentals that allowed him to maybe progress his skills at a rate that he might not have been able to do without me. So, you know, I just think it's cool. I think it's a fun aspect. That's one of the things that we always talk about, not just me and him, but just in general, is you never know how much a trainer impacts a player. You know what I mean? Do they really help out a ton? Do they really help out a little bit? And my whole goal is just be a small part of the process where hopefully I can make their life easier by doing all the dirty work for them, the analytics, the film, the studying the game, the stealing from other players, the, you know, putting together kind of efficient workouts based on science and based on research that can help them just go out there and focus on just playing the game they love. And so we've developed a great bond. And I think that both of us from an early age wanted to be special. He just wanted to be special as an NBA player. I wanted to be special in the helping people and players category. And so it's fortunate that it's worked out well for both of us.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great fit for both of you guys. And I know I've talked to Brad about, you know, your guys' work together, and he credits you for helping him make that all-star leap. I know a lot of these guys really appreciate the work that you put in for them. So it's been cool to kind of watch your career blow up the way it has and, you know, in turn, watch these players succeed as well. Another guy that you've worked with is Zach LaVine. He's shooting 40% from three this year while taking a career high, 6.9 threes per game. Is that something you guys kind of focused on this summer, is three-point shooting? And what were kind of your sessions with Zach like?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I know that Zach got a lot of a bash on TV because he was, you know, basically saying mid-range jump shots aren't bad and people went at him like crazy. But the truth is what he was just saying is, you know, sometimes you just got to score and sometimes that'll be three-pointers, sometimes that'll be mid-range. But no, very similar to Brad, you know, big emphasis on shooting more threes. He's such a good shooter. I mean, you know, every single year, you know, pretty much he's been hovering in that high 30 category. This year, I know he's at 40 exactly. So, you know, there's no reason not to shoot more attempts. You know, last year he had a really good year as far as driving to the basket as well. You know, I think this year he's still finding his kind of rhythm. You see kind of inconsistencies game to game, and so he's still got to find his flow with this new lineup, new kind of system that they're running. But I think that once he really figures it out, you'll see him back hitting his stride and, you know, up there in the mid 20 point per game. But, you know, I've been proud of how he's progressed the last 2 years, really, as kind of an all-around player. You know, you see him averaging almost 5 rebounds a game, 4 assists a game. So, you know, he went from a guy early on in his career where, you know, a lot of people thought he was just a scorer, but now he's becoming, you know, more versatile in each of those categories so that he's not just one-dimensional. But, you know, he's a guy that I brag on him all the time, just, you know, the work that him and his dad put in, you know, in all the strength and conditioning, you know, and they've been putting in ever since he was younger, and to see the athlete he is and the work that he does on his own at night. You know, I mean, he's a guy that is a self-improver, and y'all always bet heavily on Zach just because he's got the mindset, he's got the determination, and he backs it up with the hard work. So I know that, you know, so far this season he's had a couple really good games, a couple games where he's not you know, had as much luck, but the truth is, you know, he's a guy that I think that he's going to get rolling here soon, and he'll be in the conversation to be an all-star if the Bulls win a couple more games.
One thing that I always struggle with as an analyst, and I know fans sometimes wonder this too, is, you know, looking at some of these small sample sizes and wondering what's for real and what's not. You know, not looking at anyone here in particular, but I'm just thinking, you know, as I kind of break down things around the NBA, I'm always wondering, you know, can the player or can the team sustain this success? For you, you know, at what point do you look at a sample size and think, okay, this is big enough to start making some judgments? And what are some of the keys for players when they do get off to a strong start, being able to sustain that success, or if they get off to a slow start, being able to like flip the switch and turn it around?
Yeah, you know, I'm a big believer in watching film. And so I always say that, you know, I watch games live all the time and I'm at the games and I always tell them, you know, hey, listen, regardless how well you thought you played or how poorly you thought you played, it's probably not as good as you thought or as bad as you thought. And so most people look at analytics and they think just the straight numbers. They think points per game, they think rebounds per game, et cetera. But for a guy that actually studies and watches the game, what I like to do is, you know, I like to make adjustments with my clients after every 2 games. You never want to react to just one bad game. So every 2 games, I send them film edits. Some of the guys like them after every game, you know, just because they like that consistency. You know, they want to get in a flow of maybe, you know, watching a video right before they go out and play, et cetera. But I always say normally you can kind of see what a player is going to do after about 10 games. So I give them about 10 games or league-wide to say, all right, this is probably what, if they don't make adjustments, if the team doesn't make trades, if the, you know, coaches don't make any big time scheme adjustments or rotation adjustments, this is kind of what you're going to get from the player for that season. And so we're getting close to that point where you can kind of start seeing numbers kind of balance out. You know, people are starting to shoot their kind of true percentages, et cetera. And this is when players have to make adjustments, either, you know, put their foot on the gas and really, you know, start attacking more, or do the opposite and start to, you know, make sure that they kind of settle into the role that their team needs them to play so that they can help their team win more. And I think that the biggest thing that I try to preach over and over again to the casual fan is that the number one analytic isn't really an analytic. It's how much do you impact winning? That's the best skill a player can have. And so, you know, I think that a lot of people get hung up on, you know, points per game or rebounds per game or assists per game or blocks or et cetera, but how much do you impact winning? You know, if we look at defense, you know, I've been kind of bothered sometimes by how disrespected kind of Joel Embiid's defense, even though he's always a second teamer or whatever, all NBA defensive player. You know, when you look, if you ask the NBA players, who do you fear most out there? Who makes the biggest impact? A lot of them would have Joel up there at the top. And so, you know, same thing offensively. You look at guys, sometimes you look at off, you know, guys that are like, you know, out there playing and they're contributing. Some guys are box score stuffers, but they don't really make a team win more games. And so I think that that's what I'm always looking for is how well do these guys actually change their team's ability to win games? And, you know, if you watch film and if you really kind of use the eye test along with analytics, along with the box score, then you can really see how well a guy's playing for that certain season.
For sure. One of those players and one of those teams that's really exceeding expectations so far is the Phoenix Suns. And you work with Kelly Oubre. I think you can even look back at last season before the trade to now. I mean, there's very clearly a difference in how this team plays with Kelly and without Kelly. He's had a huge impact there. You know, this year he's averaging career highs in points, assists, steals, 3-point percentage. I mean, he's playing great basketball right now. I'm noticing a trend here. Your guy's averaging career highs, by the way, but he's been great. I mean, I think a lot of people around the NBA are wondering, is this Suns team for real? They're 5-2, and it looks like they're much improved. You know, what was your, I know you're in Phoenix actually right now working with Kelly. What's your work been with Kelly like? And when you look at this Suns team, do you think they can sustain this?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually been fun. I was at the game the other night when they played against Philly, and you know, it's been impressive to see how much harder they're playing, how much more they're rotating on defense, how much more they're sharing the ball on offense. I mean, if anybody watched them the past couple seasons, I mean, it was hard to watch at times. There would be times where I would almost be tempted to just watch Kelly's clips instead of watching the whole game, just because it wasn't a great brand of basketball. And this season, you know, it's been so much more fun to watch just because they're sharing the ball on offense. Defensively, they're really moving as a unit. They're trying to help the helper. They're trying to, you know, be in the right spots, et cetera. But I think Kelly brought a lot of that with him. You know, Kelly, when he was in D.C., was always, you know, playing hard, but he really was in a role more of, you know, kind of just do your role. And when he went to Phoenix, they really believed in him. They wanted him to kind of come in and bring energy and effort. And I think that he exceeded their expectations in that category. But Kelly's one of those guys that, again, benefited from an opportunity change. And also, I mean, just works his butt off. You know, I mean, he's a guy that people don't realize that, you know, he averaged, I think it was like 3 or 4 points a game his rookie season. And then he like doubled it. I think he was at like 6 or 7. Then he went to like 12 and, you know, 15. And now he's at, I think, I don't know, 17 or 18 a game.
Yeah, 17.
Every single game, he's just, you know, in every single season, he's improved his game. And that's because, you know, he adds to his game each and every summer. This year, you've seen him shooting a lot more threes, you know, at a higher clip. You know, he's shooting like 36% from three. He's also attacking the basket a lot. So, you know, but his big thing is also defense, you know, and I think that, you know, that's where he can add value is on the defensive end, being a stopper, using his length, using his size to disrupt wing scorers. And, you know, I love their team. You know, Devin Booker is a guy that he spent a week or two with us this summer. Kelly had brought him out to work out, and, you know, he's obviously so skilled and putting up crazy numbers early on. And they've got a lot of role players that just buy into their kind of, you know, role and excel at that role. And guys like, you know, we were talking about Aaron Baines the other day. I mean, he's off to an unbelievable start. You know what I mean? And so I think that when you believe in yourself, you put in the work and you have the opportunity, that's when you start to get the results. And I think the Suns are off to a hot start because they have a lot of guys that have put in work, have good, you know, have kind of good opportunities to play their role. And now they're shining in those roles.
For sure. Yeah. I think guys like Kelly, guys like Baines, you know, they do a lot of the little things that you're kind of mentioning that don't show up in the box score. With Kelly, I mean, they show up in the box score and he does things outside of it. But yeah, it's been fun for them. I'm happy for Suns fans. They haven't really had much to be excited about in recent years. So it's cool to see them get off this hot start. Mo Bamba is a guy that you've also worked with in Orlando. Last year, when we talked about him prior to the start of the season, you kind of said that you were working with him in the same way that you work with Embiid, that you had him on similar plans. And you kind of said last year, it's going to take him some time. He needs to build up his lower body strength and things like that. Where is he at in his development, and what have you seen from him?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I said this last year, and he gets mad at me for saying this sometimes, so I almost don't like to say it. But I told him, I you know, when I had him in the draft process, you know, I said, hey, listen, you're a guy that it's going to take, you know, 3 years to really kind of develop. But as long as you buy into, you know, getting better each and every year, you know, then by the end of your kind of rookie contract, you should be a big time contributor and a guy that can help out, you know, defensively. He has length and size. Offensively, I've really liked, you know, his ability to, you know, shoot the same shot, which is really what you're looking at early on, is just, can he shoot the same shot? And I think that, you know, as his role grows, I think you'll see him get more and more comfortable. Any player that has ever played the game knows that if you're playing spotted minutes, it's hard to get in a flow and get into rhythm and really feel confident without kind of looking over your shoulder and wondering if you're going to come out, if you make a mistake or whatever. So I think as his role expands, he's going to kind of settle in to kind of, you know, showcase him what he can do. But, you know, for him, it's just all about kind of the long-term success, you know, long-term success. And, you know, it's another reason why a guy like, you know, Taco Fall, who's another one of my guys that I worked with in the pre-draft process, it's why he's in the G League right now. It's, you know, a lot of people wonder, you know, because the fans love him, why would the Celtics put him in the G League? It's because it's all about long-term impact and long-term having a long career. And so I think, you know, both of those guys, while they're on different kind of paths, you know, I think that that's the goal is, you know, having a long, successful NBA career. And I think for Mo, he's just, you know, got to continue to buy into getting better each and every day so that he can eventually be a big time contributor, which I think he will be down the line.
Yeah, I remember, you know, Mo Bamba mentioned that he actually suggested Taco Fall that he should work with you. And I know that kind of came together that way. With Taco, I mean, I know, like you said, he's a fan favorite and people are following his game. He's so unique with his size. What do you think he needs to do to become an every night contributor or a rotation player in the NBA?
It's just hard for us to say. I mean, he's 7'7". You know what I mean? And
right.
So I don't know. You know, it's hard to judge him because there's not many other 7'7" guys that we can compare him to. But what I can tell you about Taco is we've put together a very, very simple development plan that just works on basically right hooks and left hooks right around the rim, being able to duck in, catch high, finish high, being able to set good wide screens without moving, being able to catch the ball in a short roll with, you know, and be able to take one dribble and dunk, one dribble and kick out to shooters, or one dribble and throw a lob to a you know, a teammate in the dunker spot. And then basically on defense, just being able to block shots and alter shots without fouling, being able to guard ball screens, being able to move his feet laterally. I think the earliest thing that can get him on the floor is if he can guard ball screens without fouling. I think right now, sometimes because he can't, you know, move as quick laterally as some of the guards that he has to, you know, contain, he ends up having a tendency to use his length and reach in and get fouls. And so I think that once he can guard ball screens without fouling, I think that he'll be able to contribute on the defensive end. And then on the offensive end, it's just about slowly, you know, working on just getting good deep seal catches where he can catch the ball and then just take, you know, either no dribbles and finish it by keeping it high over either shoulder, or just take one dribble and then making a good read, whether it's attacking the middle or spinning off and attacking baseline. But he's not going to ever have to have a bag full of tricks. He's just going to have to get really, really good at a few things. And I think he's on that path. He's shown a ton of improvement since, you know, last year, you know, in the college basketball season, you know, as far as his ability to, you know, just be on balance and play without fouling, et cetera. So I look forward to, you know, this year, him in the G League. And I look forward to him, you know, when he does step up to the Celtics team and just see how he progresses throughout the year. And then hopefully has a great summer. You know, and he's going to be a guy that, again, if he can just figure out how to make free throws, guard without fouling, and just take care of the ball in offense, he'll be a guy that has a long career as long as he stays healthy.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That's the right way to look at it. I want to ask you about Zion Williamson, because there's been a lot of talk about his injury. I know some people are thinking, okay, is this weight related? Does he need to kind of change his plan that he's on? The Pelicans have insisted, no, it's not his weight. You know, we're not concerned. When you have, I know you've worked with Zion a bit in the past, and he had the injury in Summer League, and then now obviously has this injury to start his NBA career off. What do you think, what would you recommend if you were, you know, running Zion's training? Would you think that he needs to lose weight or change his plan a little bit?
For me, I'm always slim as in. You know, I remember when Myers Leonard came to me 2 or 3 summers ago. I guess we've worked together 3 summers, Myers and I. When Myers came to me, he wanted to bulk up. He had played Joel Embiid one-on-one, and Joel maybe got the best of him, would be the nice way to say it. And Myers said, I got to bulk up. I got to get stronger. And I said, I think you need to do the opposite. I think you need to, you know, subtract 10 pounds instead of add 10 pounds. And Myers ended up subtracting about 15 pounds from where he currently was at. Now, he wanted to add 10 pounds because he thought he needed to get stronger. But him dropping those 15 pounds made him a lot more mobile, you know, a lot more fit. He was in better shape. And he basically transitioned more to the current NBA game. And you see Myers now starting for the Miami Heat, where 2 years ago he you know, struggled to find himself on the floor for Portland. I would do the same thing. I mean, Brad Beal lost weight. You see Joel, when he's lower weight, it helps him out a lot. I think most people, you know, if you're slimmer and you're You have less body weight, then you just have less wear and tear. You can play more minutes. You can recover faster, et cetera. So my recommendation to him, if I was working with him, and again, he's such an amazing athlete, regardless of weight, that it's hard to say that, you know, hey, listen, you need to do anything to become a better athlete. But I think that, you know, for me, the advice I give to all my guys is, you know, if you can keep your weight down a little bit so that, you know, it's just less wear and tear on your joints. It's easier to recover. And then also just so that you can play kind of a more mobile brand of basketball, which I think the NBA has transitioned to.
Yeah, I think people are just so excited to see him play that they want him to be healthy. They don't want to see his career robbed from him and, you know, have him be one of those guys that's a big what if. I think that's why a lot of people are passionate about this and talking about this. They want to make sure that he's going to be able to live up to his potential and have a long, healthy career. So I think that's why you're hearing so much talk about this. And just because, you know, he's Zion. And anything Zion does is going to be magnified. There's going to be tons of talk about it. But no, I would agree with you.
I think one other thing I would say, though, if you look at all the explosive players, I mean, like super, freakishly explosive players, a lot of them do deal with injuries. You know, Zach, you know, LaVine, who we talked about earlier, he had the ACL injury. You look at guys like Dwight Howard, who won multiple dunk contests. I mean, boom, he's had issues with, you know, his body all over the place. And you look at, it's just hard for these guys. It's hard for these guys when they're that freakishly athletic to stay healthy because, it's hard to do that much with your body, and they're capable of more than the average, you know, even elite athlete can do. So I don't think it's all weight. I think that, some of it could just be because he's super explosive and, and that just might be something that's hard for the body to kind of, reproduce over and over again without breaking down. But, I definitely think that as his career goes on, you'll see him kind of phase down, similar to like LeBron did. LeBron really built his body up where he strengthened. And then after that, you really saw him slim down. And I think that's why LeBron's able to do what he's doing now is because he's really changed his body. You know, he altered the way he really kind of built himself. And I think that's paid big dividends for LeBron's career. And I think that you'll see guys like Zion kind of follow that same trend.
LeBron's health is one of the most impressive things about him. The fact that he's never had a serious injury. I know some of that is, you know, luck, obviously, but there's been talk about how he puts, you know, $1.5 million into his body every year. You know, he prioritizes his recovery and then his body over everything else. When you look at someone like LeBron, you know, I guess for me, I don't understand everything that goes into staying healthy and preparing your body. So for me, I'm just thinking, how is this guy at 34 years old still able to do what he does? And again, he was one of those explosive people that we're talking about, but he never really had a major injury. What makes LeBron so unique in that way? When you look at LeBron, you know, is it really good luck, or is it, you know, luck combined with everything that he does?
I don't really believe in luck. I believe in hard work. and I think that that's what LeBron did. I think that obviously he's very blessed. He had some athletic, you know, talents that, he was born with. But I think that he's worked really, really, really hard and, dedicated his entire life to becoming great at something. And that's what he's exactly done. And so, I think that, if you see the work that he puts in before the game, you know, he's over there balancing on different types of platforms and balls so that he can, you know, make sure his core is, you know, in line. He makes sure that he does all of his stretching before and after games. You even see guys like, even like guys like Kawhi, who I know has had, you know, some injury stuff, but even guys like Kawhi who, you know, delay the post-game press conferences so that he can, you know, make sure that he does all of his treatment after games.
Yeah.
That just shows the level of commitment that some of these guys have. And so it's something that a lot of my young guys struggle with, but as they get older, they improve. I mean, I remember Brad Beal when I went down to visit him at Florida. I was actually a senior in college when Brad was a freshman. So I was playing at Belmont when he was at UF. And I remember one of the weekends we had off, I flew down to Florida to train him during the season, and he had pizza boxes and Skittle wrappers all over his room. And now, you know, he has a nice diet and take care of himself. It's just people mature and grow once they realize that, their body is kind of their moneymaker, and also their body is what's going to allow them to play a high level, good brand of basketball for a long time. And so I think that a lot of young players come into the league and since they're young, they, you know, the eating whatever they want, drinking whatever they want, going out, staying out, you know, late and not sleeping, that doesn't affect them. But then they realize that, you know, it's not about just getting by. It's about, you know, improving and being able to sustain success for a long time. And that's when they really get serious on the nutrition. That's when they get serious on the prehab. And that's when they get serious on the kind of basketball specific strength and conditioning, instead of just, you know, pushing big weights like a lot of kind of high school football players might do.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Iman Shumpert has told a story about LeBron and says basically, you know, there can be people that are there at the game to meet him. There can be, you know, everyone's going out after a game and, you know, going out to a club or something like that. And LeBron just says, no, you know, his recovery comes first. He's going to, like you said, kind of like Kawhi pushing back interviews. He'll push back everything in his schedule to make sure he can recover and take care of his body, because that is his moneymaker. I think he understands that and prioritizes that. I want to end on this note. You have a cool new thing that you're doing. I've seen you tweet about this a bit, where you have a phone number and players and coaches and people like that can reach out to you and communicate with you directly. Is that right?
Yeah. So one of the things I wanted to do is, you know, I see the game of basketball and the way it's gone, and, you know, especially social media. I always laugh because I'm normally on the inside of a lot of information, and laugh at everything that's tweeted or reported, or people complaining about travel calls or this or that. And so what I decided to do is I got a phone number that it's for players, coaches, trainers, fans, that basically every day I send out an instructional basketball video just to kind of inform them on different basketball topics. And then also, you know, I respond to text messages. I normally fly so much, you know, from client to client, that when I'm on the airplane, I reply to as many kind of texts as I can. But, you know, the number's 314-461-1862. And basically, if they text me, all they have to do is, you know, text me, they fill out their first and last name so that I can add them to my phone book. And then they get a free daily, you know, video, instructional video. Also, I give away tickets. I gave away some tickets to the Suns game the other day, do nice meetups. And it's just a fun way for me to connect. You know, a lot of times, you know, fans and players and coaches don't get kind of the real behind the scenes look. And so it's my little give back to the basketball community, a way to, you know, 100% free to really allow them to have the insights. I do film breakdowns. I do analytic studies. We did a big, I sent out a big one the other day talking about balance on shooting. I studied the top 20 shooters in the NBA and realized how much balance affected shooting percentage, you know, and it was basically saying that like the best shooters in the NBA, if they keep their feet wide, if they land with their feet wide and didn't turn in the air, they were actually shooting over 60% from beyond 12 feet. Whereas if their feet came together, like kind of like a hockey skater stop where their feet came together and twisted, it dropped down to like 29%.
Wow.
And so stuff like that, it's amazing how many fans now text me and will be like, yo, did you just see so-and-so just miss this shot? His feet came together. He should have kept his feet wide. And just for them to know the little, what I call micro skills, basically the skills within the skills. So instead of just watching basketball for the pure enjoyment, they can kind of watch the game with kind of a more detailed trained eye, so that they can see the things that, you know, the players are kind of making adjustments, you know, game by game. It makes it fun, especially for fantasy owners. They love to be able to kind of hear more about what their best player should be doing and take it to social media so that they can act like they're, you know, the informed one now, once they hear about all their favorite players.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's very cool. We'll include the phone number in the description for this episode too. So if anyone wants to check it out there, if you missed it, we'll have it in the description too. Awesome, Drew. Thank you so much for your time, man. This has been so much fun. I appreciate you doing this.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me on. And as always, I always look forward to seeing all the stuff that you guys tweet about and do all that kind of stuff. I follow that stuff too. It's fun for us to, you know, check in and see what everybody's talking about. So keep up the good work there.
Thanks, man. Appreciate that. Make sure you guys are following Drew on Twitter, by the way, at Drew Hanlon. Make sure you guys are following Pure Sweat. That's Drew's company where he works with all these different players. Make sure you guys go ahead and text that phone number he mentioned. And if you guys want to listen to more episodes of the Hoopsite podcast, you can check us out on iTunes, Spotify, Audio Boom, Stitcher, anywhere your favorite podcast can be found. And until next time, thanks for listening.